This Steve Jones Show podcast is now loading. The Steve Jones Show podcast is presented by Sunbury Motor Company, Purdy Insurance, Brewers Outlet, and NIL Game Changers. Bringing you an in-depth look at Penn State sports and more, this is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. The Steve Jones Show is presented by Brewers Outlet, Sunbury Motor Company, and Purdy Insurance. Now, from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Wait, Debbie Willis on the show today, as always. This half hour being brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Morgan Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Auto, home, light, business, boat, motorcycle, RV. Multitude of insurance needs. Purdy Insurance handles them all, and they make sure they do everything they can to save you money. Customer service means everything to them. Great people, great pros. Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. It's always great to spend any time in conversation with the outstanding Neil Coulong. Sir, welcome.
As always, it is fantastic to be here. Thank you for having me.
Okay, so I was talking with a friend of mine. Okay, probably an acquaintance, but a friend, at least on my end. And what we were talking about was about Justin Fields. And I told him, I said, look, Fields is... no question, good enough to be in the league. He's good enough to have some success in the league. But he has so many limitations, he's about as far as he can get in the league. What is your evaluation of him at this point?
I would say you start with a holistic look at all of the people who are able and eligible to play, to be the starting quarterback in the NFL right now.
Yep.
There's really not a whole lot of them, but what's even smaller is the fact that there are only probably seven or eight really good ones. From that point down, you know, you put it this way, the average quarterback in the NFL is not very good, relatively speaking, as for what we're used to in terms of statistical accomplishment, in terms of their ability to take over a game, really to play the game the way that the rules have designed it to be played in the modern times, the last 15 years or so. There just simply aren't very many of them. Justin Fields is certainly not one of those eight, but he's not out of the top 32 either. The fact that there are probably, give or take, 96 quarterbacks on NFL rosters, he's probably in the better third of that secondary group. What that means is you have to do a lot to kind of set him up to be successful. There's not a whole lot of extra that he can bring to a team. One advantage he does have is he's a good runner. He's agile. He's big. So that can help you in short yardage situations. And I think that's the boost that he's given to the Steelers to this point. But when it comes to him dropping back, surveying the field, delivering a pass down the field on time and accurately, that's not something he does consistently well. In fact, you don't really get much out of him when it comes to that. And I hear Steelers fans yelling, you know, constantly about how they need to open up the offense for him. There's a reason they don't have him throwing 15 to 18 yard out routes from a seven-step drop. He doesn't see those very well. He doesn't see the whole field. The most success that he has in passing the ball, and this was true in Chicago too, was when they roll him out. When you roll out, you're basically angling the field diagonally and with that narrowing it. So there's less that he has to see. There's probably only got to be one, maybe two options at that deeper level. And if he sees that as being open, he'll deliver the ball. But what I see with Justin Fields is when he drops back straight, when he's got both alleys to his right and his left and down the seam in front of him, and he's got three, four options in there, he does not see all of them fast enough to deliver the ball where it needs to go when a receiver is able to catch it. He hesitates. It seems like it's taking him a little bit too long to figure out where to go with it, and he's not playing with a real sense of urgency. You'll notice that he sits in the pocket probably a bit longer than your more prolific passers are on a snap-to-snap basis, and he tends to want to scramble. He wants to break schedule, and he wants to get outside and try to make a play that way, but he doesn't do that particularly well either. Now, what's limiting him a bit more, I think, is a pretty disastrous receiver room that the Steelers, through hook or crook, failed to really address this offseason. You put those things together, you're not getting the full complement of a successful passing game within the structure of today's NFL with Pittsburgh. Now, do they want that situation for Justin Fields? Probably not as much, but at the same time, based on the timing of the transactions that they made, they didn't bring Justin Fields in to be their starter anyway. So I don't think that they put a whole lot of time and effort into catering the higher level offensive game plan to Fields and what Fields can do, and probably, to your point, more his limitations. What is he able to avoid? What can we get him out of? We don't want to put him in a bad spot. We need to find the things that he does well and really just focus on that. There aren't a whole lot of them that really makes him a difference-making player. Now, are there worse quarterbacks in the NFL? Absolutely. And there's going to be more that continue to come in. We may see one in Pittsburgh sooner rather than later. We've seen worse play from the quarterback position in Pittsburgh recently. So Fields is not bad, but he's not particularly good either. You have to set him up. There's a lot of things that you need to do in order to make him successful. And that speaks to, I think, a lot of things. But the Steelers' offense at this point is not in the state that it's in because Justin Fields is playing poorly. He's doing okay. You give him a C to a C-plus probably overall. There are a lot of Ds and some Fs on this offense, and that is why they're averaging, 18 points a game. And there's no real reason to think that that's going to improve anytime soon.
Yeah, because one of the jobs of any coaching staff is that, look, they need to be the first ones to realize their deficiencies. And then you try to mask those deficiencies as much as you can. The problem is, the deeper you get into a season, opposing coaching staffs who are breaking down video see the deficiencies. And I think that's what's happening with the Steelers the last couple of weeks. They're now seeing where the deficiencies are, and that's why the Steelers offensively don't look like they have any rhythm whatsoever, because I think other coaching staffs are saying, yep, there's Waldo, there's Waldo, there's Waldo, and they're killing it.
Yeah, I agree completely. What we saw, and we talked about this last week, what we saw against the Colts was a very active defensive line doing things that they hadn't done to that point in the season, which strongly suggests this is something they prepared to do specifically against Pittsburgh, and it really worked up their offensive line to a point where they struggled badly in protection. Couldn't really help Fields a whole lot until, more toward the end of the game when they had some success. But they screwed him up early by getting in his face, and that was by destroying their protection. What we saw on Sunday wasn't exactly the same type of thing, but what Dallas did was drop more guys into the shorter areas of the field, and they really challenged the Steelers' wide receivers, which probably isn't a Herculean task for any defense at this point, but they were with them everywhere they went on the field. They really struggled to get open. They played with an attitude. They played very physically. And with that, what they really did was, in my opinion at least, I don't know if Mike Zimmer would say the same thing, but they challenged Justin Fields to release the ball, and he wouldn't do it in a tight window. Because this is what works against the Steelers, that have, it seems as if their general concept, not that any team plans to turn the ball over, but the Steelers make priorities 1, 2, and 3 to protect the football. They do not want to see the ball taken away by the opposing defense. They want to take it away themselves. And to their credit, you can have some success with that. rarely do you win the turnover battle 3-0 and lose the game. And that's what happened to the Steelers on Sunday. Justin Fields, though, in the absence of turning the ball over, isn't making big plays either. Now, to his credit, he went down the field a little bit. Some good defensive play out of Dallas in their secondary. You have to give them some credit. But Fields, he takes too long to find somebody wherever they happen to be, and that goes in concert with a group that, frankly, doesn't get open particularly well. Their receivers don't work with a whole lot of separation. They're not winning their one-on-one battles. And when you put that with a quarterback who is, you know, by mandate or choice or both, not releasing the ball, if it's even kind of tight, you're not going to make plays. And that's really where they are. They're you know, their average per play is way down compared to the rest of the league. Whatever playmakers they have, or at least fans think that they have, they're doing very little, and in some cases not doing anything at all throughout the course of the game. They're not putting them into a great position to succeed. So I don't know what you want Fields to be within the structure that they're playing in. What I would say, though, overall, is for a team that wants to identify itself as ground-based, they want to be physical up front. They've invested a ton in their offensive line in order to be able to do that. They don't run the ball well. So what's the identity here? They're trying to do all of these things, but none of it works. New coordinators, new kind of new players, new quarterbacks. They've changed everything out. It's the same. And this was my biggest concern going into the season. I don't know how much improvement they're going to see in year one of Arthur Smith. I think Arthur Smith dials some stuff up, and I think it's looked better from a coordination standpoint, but there's still a lot of hiccups. There are a lot of players that are not playing particularly well. It's not all on the quarterback. It's not all on the coordinator, but they're not helping themselves in a lot of these areas. And the results are now week to week. They know exactly what they're going to do. And we've seen it 2 weeks in a row now. They've been stifled for large periods of each game that result in losses. Tight losses, but losses nonetheless.
Modern football on display. T.J. Watt, if there's any point, I need him. I need him in the fourth quarter, and I need him on the last drive. Yet repeatedly they showed him in the fourth quarter and a couple of times in the last drive, throwing water into himself and breathing as if he just ran a 26-mile marathon. Right? No offense, Joe Green never came out. Sorry, just didn't. Jack Ham didn't come out of games. I know it's the modern way of doing things, but what am I missing here? I mean, it's the fourth quarter. If there's any time you need to be out there, it's got to be then. What is the thought process behind this?
My only assumption, I don't know how fair this is, it's you ask coaches about this. It really is a lot harder to manage play to play in football just because things can get so out of whack on one or two plays right away. What you need to be doing is saving T.J. Watt during the game so he can play the entire fourth quarter. But then Nick Herbig goes down. You've got there are plumbers and firemen playing outside linebacker for the Steelers in crunch time. And this isn't the first time this has happened either. They've had issues with this. Injuries obviously happen in a game, but when Watt is the only presence of a pass rush you're going to get, and that 49 kid, whoever that moon guy is, I appreciate the effort. He played hard. You know, he was making the most out of his opportunities, but he's not Alex Highsmith. He's not even Nick Herbig. You're not getting anything on the other side of the line. Watt doesn't have anything left, probably because they needed him earlier to save whatever was left of the game. Before this gets to two scores, when they know they can't come back into it, Watt had to make a play. And Dallas did a really good job of containing him 2 weeks in a row now, even though Watt broke through a few times and made impactful plays in this game. But, you know, the fact that I agree with you, I think he was gassed by the end of it, for whatever reason that is, probably because he has to play harder than any other player in the NFL in order for his team to have a chance to win, usually late and in dramatic fashion. He wasn't able to do anything on that final drive. In fact, it was Landon Roberts making the play of his career.
Right, yes.
That was stopped, unfortunately, by a wet field in the most pro Dak Prescott bounce that's ever happened. I mean, it was just a tragedy. Just the level of awareness by Roberts, the effort that he put in to land in a very Gary Brackett style, Gary Brackett being the guy who caused the fumble on Jerome Bettis in the divisional playoffs back in 2005. Yeah. That level of timing for that ball to bounce directly to the one guy who's not covered at that point, just tragic in many ways. But my point is, usually it's T.J. Watt making that kind of a play to steal a game. And the Steelers had the opportunity to do it, but fell just short, mostly because Watt couldn't come up with the game-saving play. Now, most teams in this league, and probably for the last 30 years, haven't required a defensive player to make a gigantic play on the ball in order for them to win. But that's what Watt has done for the last 5 years, and the Steelers are spoiled because of it. You know, following that game, my first thought was the reason the Steelers finish 9-8 every year, 10-7, is because they somehow managed to win these games where they're outgained 4.5-1, where they have four plays that they won on the entire game. They're all takeaways, and they were able to kick the ball well. That's the only reason they're competitive in these games. They block a field goal in this one. We've talked about this before. They always win when they block a kick. This was the one time they didn't. And it just goes to show how thin of an edge they're riding on. And T.J. Watt is usually the guy that's making that splash play late in a game in order for them to seal it in what I think most people would say is a game they really shouldn't have won. Dallas left the door open. Dallas let Pittsburgh be in that spot. And they needed absolutely everything in order to come away with that win. It was a big win for Dallas and a real tough loss for Pittsburgh. But I think that if we went to the judges' scorecards, they'd show that Dallas won that game on paper.
There's no question Dallas was the better team in the game. I mean, all the way through. It's just, but the bottom line is, okay, I've got two horses out there, okay, the plow horse and the thoroughbred. They're both sweating just as hard, Neil, but there's a reason why the thoroughbred is the thoroughbred and the plow horse is the plow horse. Thoroughbred's got to be out there. He's got to play. I mean, he may be playing hard, but which I do think he plays very, very hard. But guys from a bygone era didn't come out of games.
I think that's the tricky part to this, too, is you have to ask yourself, how many times are you going to get Hall of Fame-level production out of T.J. Watt? And at what point can you say, we really can't rely on this every single week? Not when you randomly bench your only explosive offensive playmaker, because if you watch him, he doesn't play very hard. You have nobody else that can do anything in the game except for T.J. Watt. What the one time that, I don't know, his age catches up to him a little bit. The snap counts he's been playing his entire career catches up to him. He didn't have the best nutrition this week. Whatever it is, he doesn't have those final five plays that you need. Right. If that's what your team is depending on, what did you do all offseason? How did you set this up and why? And these are legitimate questions. And they're ones that we've been asking constantly over the last 5 years. And it's the same team. So, really, this again, everything is going to live and die with T.J. Watt. And if that's the case, I agree with you. He needs to be on the field in the final drive. Somebody's going to have to step up and make a play. I mean, to the defense's credit, there are guys that have played well, that have made plays in their own right. But none of them are T.J. Watt. Nobody in the field is T.J. Watt. You know, that will be the case pretty much every game they play for the remainder of the season. He's got to be on the field. He's got to be out there. And, sometimes it's not as if I forget which tackle was across from him in this game after Guyton went down, but it's not as if he's fresh as a daisy either. He's been having to block Watt up and down the entire game. You don't expect him to be, first snap fresh. But he's got to get in there, use his intelligence, figure out a way to make a play on the ball and try to win the game for the team.
Yeah, I mean, and again, I think he's a great player. Has nothing to do with that. But guess what? Greatness is predicated on availability. I mean, sorry. Hey, you could be great. You're not great standing there. I'd rather have him very good and out there than waiting to see if we can have him be great. That's just me.
We're approaching this as if, you know, whether this is the case or not, obviously we don't know, but we're approaching this as if Watt was the one who took himself out.
I think they took him out.
The way that Tomlin has rotated players this year has been, to put it mildly, unique. You remember that experiment that lasted for one drive where they had the right tackle switching out series to series? That didn't work very well.
Yeah.
The quarterback situation, I think we're going to get into that, you know, probably soon, as far as likely Russell Wilson starting and Justin Fields coming in situationally. Now you have Watt not in the game in key situations when they have no depth at outside linebacker at all. They lost Leal and Herbig. So Moon was the only guy left. I don't know if they would have even had anybody else. Watt had to be out there. They called schemes that only had one outside linebacker, and it was Moon. So this is schematic to some degree. They're planning to do this. This is what they feel is their best option, because now all of a sudden Tomlin is a slave to certain snap counts. I don't know where that came from necessarily. I definitely think there's value to making sure Cam Hayward doesn't play 98% of the snaps.
Right.
You need to get your thoroughbreds in your terminology, a bit of a blow here and there. I get that.
Right.
But that's not the situation. Is this baseball now? Once you hit 100 pitches, doesn't matter the situation. The guy absolutely cannot pitch anymore. You can't do that. And situationally, when you become a slave to that, you lose the context of the game that you're playing in. Not the course of the season. It's the game right now. This is a live or die league. You're not able to kind of take the long view of things. He's got to be out there playing. And that's true of anybody. And I think we'd probably see this a lot more if there was more than just George Pickens on offense, who was probably benched more than was, you know, being given a break or a respite for a little bit.
Yeah.
If they had anybody else, they might be able to do more. But you notice when Pickens is not on the field, because then it's Calvin Austin.
Yeah.
They're not getting a whole lot from everybody overall. They've got to find a way to add to depth so they can get these guys a bit of a break. Until they do that, though, they've got to be out there playing.
Always a pleasure, my friend. Appreciate you so much.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, guys.
And this half hour brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Party time, game time, or just fun time. Doesn't matter what time it is, because it's Brewers Outlet time. The Beverage Supermarket has the area's largest beer selection. Imports, microbrews, ciders, and domestics. Pick from over 100 ice-cold 12-packs and dozens of 24-ounce singles. Soda, snacks, hot sauces, fresh roasted peanuts. Make it one-stop party shopping, and don't forget the pickle bar. So whatever you're celebrating or just doing it up, Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street, Sunbury, wants to see you. And thank you for your years of patronage.
Hi, this is Season. For over 100 years, the Purdy Insurance Agency has been protecting families and businesses of the greater Susquehanna Valley and beyond. With the experience of our trained and knowledgeable staff, you can rest assured that your needs will be evaluated and met by some of the industry's best representatives. No matter what your insurance needs are, call Purdy Insurance today at 570-286-5855. Visit our website at purdyinsurance.com or check us out on Facebook to see what we can do for you.
An in-depth look at Penn State sports and more. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. The Steve Jones Show is presented by Purdy Insurance, Brewers Outlet, and Sunbury Motor Company. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
This half hour brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. Imports, domestics, microbrews. The best selection of beer anywhere. Wine coolers, water, soft drink, snacks. Six great flavors of slushies. They roast their peanuts fresh and out every day. Pickle Bar. Live by the barrels and the dills. Indeed. Second to none. All at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury. The Beverage Supermarket. So, the Penn State wrestling schedule's out. Here it is. The NWCA All-Star Classic and Rec Hall will be on Saturday the 16th. Okay. Then they'll open the regular season with Drexel in Rec Hall on Sunday the 17th. That'll be in Rec Hall. Off to West Point the 24th for Army. Then to Bethlehem on Sunday, December 8th with Lehigh. Wyoming comes to Rec Hall on Sunday, December 15th. Then they go to the Journeyman Collegiate Duels in Nashville on Sunday, December 22nd. They're going to have Binghamton and Arkansas Little Rock. They make the turn to the Big Ten on Friday, January 10th. Back to Rec Hall for Michigan State. To Lincoln on January 17th to face Nebraska. To Piscataway on the 24th. These are all Fridays. I mean, one Friday after another. We're wrestling once a week. At Rutgers on January 24th on a Friday. Then the first Jordan Center duel, Friday, January 31st, as expected, Iowa. Everyone expected that to be one. It's going to be on Friday, January 31st. Friday, February 7th. 1 week later, the second Jordan Center duel. They will take on Michigan. Then on Sunday the 9th, to Rec Hall to take on Maryland. Friday the 14th at Ohio State. Sunday the 16th, 2 days later, at Iowa. And then they'll close out with Senior Day on Friday, February 21st in Rec Hall against American. Big Ten Championships this year are March 8th and 9th. That'll be in Evanston at Welsh Ryan Arena. You are going to love that arena, by the way. You are going to love that arena. It's not big, but it's going to be right on top of the action. It really is. The money they put into it is worth every dime. They did a great job with it. And then the home NCAAs. Wells Fargo Center in Philadelphia, March 20th to the 22nd. As Penn State will go after another national championship. And by the way, the NWCA is not a part of the Penn State season ticket package. That's Saturday, November 16th, because it's not an official NCAA event. All right? But everything else is. So there's your schedule. No times, by the way. Just have dates. But it's just a whole series of Fridays in there. Lots of Fridays.
It is strange because they usually are Friday, Sunday, aren't they?
Well, you notice at the end, the last two weekends are Friday, Sunday. Yeah. When they have Ohio State, Illinois, you know, those, you know, and after the Michigan duel, they have a Sunday one, right? So, yeah. I guess Robert Salad today. The Jets security people escorted him out of the building. Now, that's not unusual, but, like, really? Really? Okay.
Did you see Woody Johnson made them call him ambassador during the press conference?
Oh, for goodness sakes.
That's apparently what he was upset about, was losing on Sunday. He had all his friends from the British consulate there where he was ambassador to London, and they lost in front of him.
Oh,
rumors and innuendo, of course.
No, I don't doubt it.
Now, let's be honest. Aaron Rodgers is coaching that team.
Well, if they are, they're in deeper trouble than you realize.
Well, I mean, I knew it was going south when Robert Saleh tried to pat him on the back and he pushed him away 3 weeks ago.
Yeah.
I'm not a toucher.
Yeah, well, I'm a big believer in staying in your lane. Yeah. Owners should own and not overstep into management. The general manager should not ever overstep on the owner and should not overstep on the coach. The coach should not overstep on the GM, okay? But be in charge of how the game is run and players. And players should not overstep on the GM or the coach or the owner. That's just me. I think that you bring in people that have an area of expertise and let them do their jobs. And, you know, we all know they've struggled offensively, but they've struggled offensively, what, because of what Robert Saleh's been doing with the offense? No, it looks like you have a 40-year-old quarterback who's coming off of an Achilles. Gee. That's what it looks like to me. Maybe I'm wrong. Man, it wasn't like the Jets' defense gave up a pile of points. No. Didn't. I don't know. I mean, I'm not here to defend him. I mean, I don't see enough of Jets games to know whether he's doing a great job or not. It seemed like he was a steady and improved product under him. But it's the first time that Woody Johnson, by the way, 25 years owning the Jets, the first time he's ever fired a coach during the season. You know that?
I did not.
Yeah. Anytime they've removed a coach, it's always been when the season was over. He's never done it during the season until now.
I mean, if he wasn't going to get Richie Kotite during the season, there was a good chance he wasn't getting anybody, I guess, until today, right?
Oh, my goodness. There was a writer in Philadelphia, Ray Perillo. Oh, my goodness. He had to cover both the Eagles and Penn State. Man, the stories he told about covering Rich Kotite, oh, wow. I said, I looked over once and I said, Ray, not a big fan? Yeah. Like, okay. Yeah.
Man, that's a busy weekend. I guess it's also not like it was back, like it is now, but.
Yeah, it was back in the day, so, you know, I don't know. You know, when defensive players played every down and pitchers didn't come out after 111 pitches. It's a different time now. You know, and if you do it often enough, you make people think it's right. Ask yourself why all these pitchers don't have arm trouble today. I never hear about John Smoltz having arm trouble. I never heard Louis Tian say he had arm trouble. As examples, Jack Morris? Nope. I don't know. And we're told over and over again, and I do believe this. I really do believe this. I do believe these are the best conditioned athletes in the history of all these sports. Hockey, basketball, football, baseball. But then I see guys like out of games. I'm like going, whoa. That's when they created the first three quarters. You could rotate a lot in the first three quarters, but man, when it's game winning time, And I want to agree with Neil. I'm not saying Watt's pulling himself out. I'm not saying that. But yikes! I don't know. Never don't recall Reggie White on the sidelines except when the offense was out there. I don't know. Different times. Different times. You just have to go with what the times dictate. Just have, you know what I mean? You have to adapt to what, okay, that's the way it is today. That's really the attitude for the most part I take. But man, I'll tell you, when it's winning time, I want my best players out there. Can't have my best players watching. But that's me. Oh, well. Not my team, so I don't worry about it. Oh, man. And your Mets, we have Sean Manaea tonight. I heard you've been pacing all day.
I get internally nervous. I don't outwardly get nervous.
Why the Mets?
My grandmother.
Okay.
I think my grandmother was a New York Giants fan and then transferred to the Mets when they came in 62.
Okay. Yeah. No, I just thought I'd ask. I understand why the Phillies for Phillies fans. I mean, people grew up here. That's their team. Completely get it. It's like with the Eagles, same thing. Well, that's what you grew up with, so that's what you get passionate about.
It's interesting. I would bet that there's more Steelers fans around here in this immediate area than there is Eagles fans.
What about Yankees fans?
I would say I know Yankees fans. I would say there's more Steelers fans than Yankees fans. Phillies are the most. I would say there might be more Pirates fans around here than Phillies fans or Yankees fans too.
Well, you know what I think is interesting is I think if you go to Scranton, there are more Yankee fans.
Oh yes. I mean, that's how long has that been a AAA team for the Yankees now? Like 10-15 years.
I know.
And I mean, it's a lot. I mean, what is it? It's probably an hour. It's probably 90 minutes to Yankee Stadium from there too.
Right. Well, all I know is when I see, the Phillies drawing so well, it's that Citizens Bank Park's a beautiful ballpark. But the Phillies try. I mean, it's always been the Dave Dombrowski MO. I mean, it doesn't mean every move's perfect. We know that. But boy, they sure do try. I mean, that's me. I mean, that's. It's the organizations that don't seem to try that just drive you nuts.
I was going to say, I'm glad I'm not a Pirates fan.
Yeah, I know. Like I said, I was talking about you the other day on the show. He said, well, you can tell him I'm really angry. I said, I got it. All right. But like every year, I mean, you don't even go into spring training with hope. Then you win a few games and maybe get a little hope, and then it's like Lucy pulls the football away and we're done.
Their season has gone the same way the last 2 years, where there's that spark in the middle of May when they're playing well, and then by the time we get to August, it's the same old Pirates.
Yeah, over and over again. It's just, I feel awful for their fans. I do.
Just don't screw up Skeens.
Right. Now, and like with the Phillies, if they don't win the World Series, do I feel badly for the fans? Sure. They don't get to the World Series, do I feel badly for the fans? Sure. But at least you go through springs and summers leading into the fall thinking you've got a chance. That, you know, and there are a lot of places that do not have that. Well, tonight will be the pivotal game. I do have to do the talk show tonight, but we'll be done at 7 this evening because we have to do it tonight instead of Thursday because of the travel situation on Thursday. So, and so that's what, yeah, but I'll be home plenty of time to watch this game tonight. Plenty of time.
I think the Phil's first pitch is 5:08.
Oh, is it that early?
Yeah.
Well, I guess I'll watch it at the field then.
Yeah, the Phil's are a I don't know. I
mean, especially with the games on the West Coast. I mean, that's why. It's 5:08. Who the heck came up with this schedule? Let's see here.
Major League Baseball.
Yep, 5:08.
Phillies at 5:08 on Fox Sports 1. Because
the Dodgers and the Padres' first pitch isn't until like 9:38.
9:08. It's 9:08.
Okay.
9:08.
I know I looked to see if it was getting in the paper or not.
Yes, it was 6:08 San Diego time.
That's not good. That's going to do wonders for the shadows as well.
Oh, that's going to if I'm Bueller and I'm King, I'm like, hey, let's breeze through the first three innings because, yes. I mean, nobody's going to be able to see the ball. Yeah. So Sean Manaea for you tonight. Aaron Nola for the Fighting Roger Haddins.
I don't like that framing of it.
What, you don't like me putting the boss out there?
The
name?
Me versus the Fighting Roger Haddins.
Well, it's pretty much, yeah. I mean, let's face it. I mean, you think I'm a Mets fan? Come on.
No.
No. Right? I am, you know, I'm Switzerland in this. I'm neutral. That's why I can actually look at it realistically. As opposed to, you can't. It's like, okay, your heart's speaking, not your mind. All right. Take a break. Wrap it up in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
There's something to be said about a sale with a handshake. A service technician who really knows what he's doing. They can explain it in English what the problem is. There's nothing better than having that friend you could trust in the area. That's Sunbury Motors, where you get selection, knowledgeable salespeople, and prices that fit your budget, and more important, that friend you can trust. Welcome to Sunbury Motors, Kia, Ford, and Hyundai. You could shop other dealers and compare prices, but at Sunbury Motors, you get their lowest price promise. They research the current used vehicle market and guarantee their used car prices are the lowest. If you find a lower price, Sunbury Motors will beat it. Three dealers all in one. See their full new and pre-owned inventory at sunburymotors.com. Pick out a vehicle you like and schedule your test drive online. Follow them on Facebook. Sunbury Motors Ford and Hyundai, North 4th Street, Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf.